it's all about us, and it's time to bow down.
For joining us here today for another episode of Bow Down. Dennis and I are so excited, as always, to be here with each other, but also with you. And Dennis actually has a really cool exercise that I think we're going to try out today. So I'll just toss it right over to you, Dennis, to get us started.
Reese, as always, it's such a thrill to be here. And again, how lovely you look, just so glorious and radiant. So perfect for what we're going to do today. Or at least try. We'll see. So one of the things that I've been in my own self work and in my own understanding myself better I'm a fan of affirmations in a sense. When I first sort of started on this journey, you know, a lot of it was like something to do. It felt like it was something tangible that I could sort of do. As I matured, I guess, or as I changed, and matured sounds like I've grown up or something like that. I wouldn't say that. I hope not. But as I've developed, I guess, let's say, as I've moved along on this journey, I've come to realize for me, these statements are I just let them soak in rather than me trying to say that. I just allow them to flow over me in some senses and almost surround, you know, just saturate me in a sense. And so I found this a very nice, meditation or affirmation, however you want to look at it. We will, of course, put the link down below. The awesome, awesome creator's name, the name of the channel is Squeaky's Cauldron. We'll put a link down for people. Please go visit her and send that beautiful, beautiful creator some incredible love. Really great stuff. Really great stuff. What I thought was interesting, there's about 20 or so affirmations or statements, and they're typically I am type statements. And what I thought was interesting when I was listening to it for the first time is what came up for me when I heard each of these statements and responded to them and sort of repeated them to myself. Was there any friction? Was there any resistance? It's sort of like when you have a hangnail or your fingernail is a little bit chipped and you rub it on your clothing and it catches. And to me, those are opportunities to observe, notice that, but also question it and gently with curiosity probe, why did I feel this way? Is this how I, what do I deeply believe that stops me from truly believing that this is true? And so Reese and I thought it would be interesting to do this in real time together. I have a little bit of an advantage because I've done it already, so I know what I'm reading, but it'll be a surprise for you, Reese. I don't know, we'll see what happens. Audience, if you're listening to this, then obviously it didn't go too badly because otherwise we wouldn't be putting, or maybe we would. Maybe that's the fun of it. I don't know.
Right, but, absolutely. Before we dive in, it sounds fabulous. I just also want to encourage our listeners, if you are in a place where you can maybe ground your feet on the floor and take a moment to close your eyes, and you would like to join us for this practice and kind of reflect along with us as we debrief afterwards, I want to invite you to commune with us in this space as well. And if any stick out to you, maybe jot them down and use them for further journal prompts or reflections. These types of exercises are really great starting point for a lot of growth. So I'll just throw that out there as well. And yeah, I'm excited to be trying this and sharing it both, Dennis, with you and with our listeners.
I don't know where we're going to go, but this sounds fun and scary and just cool. Hopefully it's authentic anyway. I can promise you that.
Yeah.
So let's just take a couple of minutes to center into ourselves as well. And just, take a couple of deep breaths, breathing through the heart, just imagining as you breathe in, the air flowing through your heart, throwing through your limbs, coming back up, and as you breathe out, your heart pumping that out. And just take two more deep breaths, breathing in, again, feeling that oxygen, feeling feeling that life flowing into you. And as you breathe out, just anything, any struggles of the day, any fears, any thoughts, just let them go. Just release them. Choose to let go. And then just one more time, taking a nice deep breath, breathing in light and love and joy and happiness, letting it circulate through your body. And just breathing out peace. Okay, so let's start with a baseline. And it might seem a little bit silly, but you know, it's almost like when you take a lie detector test, they start with some baseline questions. So how can you know how you feel if we don't do some testing? So we're going to try a couple of statements here, some true and some false, and just see what comes up for you when you say them. And so the way I'd like to do this, if this works for you, Reese, is I'm going to say the statement. I'm going to look directly into the camera. I'd like you to look directly at me as if we were in the same room. And I'm going to say the statement. I'm going to ask you to repeat the statement, and then I'm going to repeat it back to you in the second person. So in other words, I will start with, let's say, I am a woman. You would repeat that, and then I would say, you are a woman. And we'll go through. There's about 20 or so statements, so this should only take a couple of minutes, but very curious to see what happens. So,
beautiful.
All right, here we go. I am a woman.
I am a woman.
You are a woman. Okay. I am a table.
I am a table.
You are a table. Now, just we'll get into it now. But what did you notice a difference between saying those two statements? What
yeah.
came up? I mean, I laughed when I said the second because I know how silly it is. But did you notice a difference in feeling?
Yeah, absolutely. I think just right off the bat, embodiment of it, right? Not only is woman an identity that mm-hmm. I feel very strongly, but I think also even just something human, right? As opposed to something non-conscious like a table already carries a different energy to it. And I think a piece of it probably is the identity that I identify with that feels so strong to me. It feels resonant, I'll say. Whereas, you know, not that I think in a certain lifetime maybe I have been a table, but not in this one, right? So it doesn't carry that same frequency.
Yeah, and you know, when I said it even to you, I it's so obviously not true. It just flows right off, right? You have
right.
no problem saying it because you know it's a joke,
right.
and it holds no resonance because we simply know it's not true. So, with that in mind, now let's do it for real and let's see what comes up. I'm so curious here. So
I love it.
All right, here we go. I am deeply and unapologetically authentic.
I am deeply and unapologetically authentic.
You are deeply and unapologetically authentic. I know when to stand and fight and when to remove myself from toxic situations.
I know when to stand and fight and when to remove myself from toxic situations.
You know when to stand and fight and when to remove yourself from toxic situations. I am aware that everything I need is with me already.
I am aware that everything I need is with me already.
You are aware that everything you need is within you already. I don't rely on outside voices to tell me what my truth is.
I don't rely on outside voices to tell me what my truth is.
You don't rely on outside voices to tell you what your truth is. I enjoy pleasure for pleasure's sake without guilt or shame.
I enjoy pleasure for pleasure's sake without guilt or shame.
You enjoy pleasure for pleasure's sake without guilt or shame. I release all situations and relationships that ask me to dim my glorious light.
I release all situations and relationships that ask me to dim my glorious light.
You release all situations and relationships that ask you to dim your glorious light. I cherish my body, and I am grateful for all that it has to teach me.
I cherish my body, and I am grateful for all that it has to teach me.
You cherish your body, and you are grateful for all it has to teach you. I am a sensual being, fully in tune with my desires.
I am a sensual being, fully in tune with all of my desires.
You are a sensual being, fully in tune with all of your desires. I respect and rejoice in the force of creativity and channel that force into all that I do.
I channel and respect the force of creativity and channel that force into all that I do.
You respect and rejoice in the force of creativity and channel that force into all that you do. I am comfortable with my darkness, and I am eager to explore and embrace my shadows.
I am comfortable with my darkness, and am eager to explore and embrace all of my shadows.
You are comfortable with your darkness, and you are eager to explore and embrace your shadows.
I am comfortable with my darkness, and I am eager to explore and embrace my shadows.
I say no when I mean no, and I say yes when I mean yes.
I say no when I mean no, and I say yes when I mean yes.
You say no when you mean no, and you say yes when you mean yes.
I say no when I mean no, and I say yes when I mean yes.
My words have the impact I desire.
My words have the impact I desire.
Your words have the impact you desire. I am a powerful force of nature.
I am a powerful force of nature.
You are a powerful force of nature. I am connected to my inner wisdom, and I rely on its guidance without fear.
I am connected to my inner wisdom, and I rely on its guidance without fear.
You are connected to your inner wisdom, and you rely on its guidance without fear. I ask for what I need in my relationships.
I ask for what I need in my relationships.
You ask for what you need in your relationships. I embrace my freedom, knowing that I always have a choice.
I embrace my freedom, knowing that I always have a choice.
You embrace your freedom, knowing that you always have a choice. I am a master at boundaries around my own behavior and how I allow myself to be treated.
I am a master of boundaries around my own behavior and how I allow myself to be treated.
You are a master at boundaries around your own behavior and how you allow yourself to be treated. I make my own choices and accept full responsibility for my life.
I make my own choices and accept full responsibility of my life.
You make your own choices and accept full responsibility for your life. I am a sovereign being, dedicated to my freedom, my truth, and my authenticity.
I am a sovereign being dedicated to my freedom, my truth, and my authenticity.
You are a sovereign being dedicated to your freedom, your truth, and your authenticity. I am comfortable with my light and bask in the beauty of my sun.
I am comfortable with my light and bask in the beauty of my sun.
You are comfortable with your light and bask in the beauty of your sun.
I am comfortable with my light and bask in the beauty of my sun.
I embrace being misunderstood, knowing that my truth will always resonate with those who need to hear it.
I embrace being misunderstood and know that my truth will always resonate with those who are meant to hear it.
You embrace being misunderstood, knowing that your truth will always resonate with those who need to hear it. I love and accept all of who I am.
I love and accept all of who I am.
You love and accept all of who you are. Well, there you go. That's it. So, first thoughts, how does that feel? Tell me, what was the experience like for you?
Right off the bat, I it's interesting because I feel myself wanting to like acknowledge the places in which I did it, quote unquote, wrong or incorrectly, which of course is then causing this the secondary thought in what I'm trying to work on, that is, there's no way to do something like this incorrectly. There's no way to do it wrong. But actually, those are places that perhaps are snags to look at, and that in general is a whisper of curiosity to dive deeper. And so I think within that, the places in which I repeated something incorrectly or didn't quite remember the right word, I don't know. I'll be curious to go back and listen to that and where that happens and when it happens. Because of course, it's in wanting to stay in the present moment, it's difficult to know exactly when and where and try and reflect as to why. But there were a few points when it was like, oh, that was definitely a word that I flipped for this other one that is curious, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
No conclusions there as of yet. I think further, the one of the really neat aspects of this exercise in particular is not just the repetition of the affirmation, which a lot of affirmations and affirmation meditations offer, but the added layer of other acknowledgement, right? To after I own this, you affirm it towards me, that there is this external source of acknowledgement there as well. And both wanting to, it was interesting because there is both a feeling of certain ones that feel really good to hear someone else say back at you, and other ones that it's like, I don't know if I want to hear someone else say this back to me, and then other ones that are, why didn't I feel this until I heard someone else say it back to me? Why did that resonate slightly differently? Or why does this one cause more fear to hear it repeated back? Or why does this one feel more real, right? In that difference. I don't think that I would ever truly want to react exactly the same to telling myself something as I would want to react to someone else telling me something, because I do think that those things should be different and distinct, and almost what you tell yourself should be this divine and sacred communication. And so I think one of the biggest kind of, to use your verbiage, trailheads here for me, is why do things feel more true when heard from an outside source, right? Like that in and of itself is indicative of a larger need to explore this facet of self-trust. And actually, right before we hopped on this call, I was doing some meditation and journaling around this ability to both hold sacred trust in ourselves and in our intuition, as well as in the universe, right? And I think oftentimes these two things are separated out. It's like, well, I don't really know what's going on or why it's happening, but I trust the universe. I trust what God, the universe, energy source is bringing me. And just kind of leaning into doubt in that way. But also, I think we can meet that same energy of, no, I trust the universe with, but I also trust myself. And a really big reason why we can trust the universe is because the universe trusts us too. That when we have doubt in ourselves, that is inherently holding doubt in the universe and in our capacity to handle or confront or embrace different things. So yeah, this really interesting balance between the separation of self and other and what truth should and might, could, and currently is in relationship to each other. That was a whole lot of word salad. I hope that made some sort of sense.
It was lovely. It was beautiful. And I love the openness and honest of it. A few things that came up for me that I'll respond to. And also I'll share a little bit perhaps about sort of even my experience, because again, we didn't really plan this. This wasn't practiced. This was totally, we talked about it 5 minutes before we started recording. So this is kind of new to both of us. So a few things. I think the first thing for me is like, it was interesting repeating it back to you, because I realized as I'm saying it, I genuinely believe every single one of these things about you. So it wasn't that I was responding to yours. I feel that way about you, and it's what I want every one of our listeners to feel inside. Like I want all of these to be true, truly true, not just fake it till you make it, not boss girl sort of true, but deep down in your soul. So that was profound for me to be able to not only say it as an exercise, but as a genuine benediction almost over you. Like that, and that's how I'm, that's how I was seeing it. And I hope that comes out into the listeners as well, because I do genuinely feel that way. I don't know if our listeners, I know they are that. I don't know if they feel that way now, but I know that all of these are true of them. Right. So that's number one. I do wonder, it was interesting. I heard what you said about this perfectionism, right? I mean, it's like this perfectionistic part that's like, oh, I didn't quite say the word exactly right. And I get that. Like, I feel that even me, like I had to shift around on the screen where the words were, because I kept looking over here and I didn't like what that was. So I moved them. So I get that. And I acknowledge that, and also can say it's perfect just the way it was, and believe that as well. And you can too, I know. But again, I honor those parts because they just want awesome stuff. Like, they want great things, right? So that's number one that came up. I do wonder the times where you repeated it after I said it. So there were a few times that happened, three or four particulars where I had repeated back to you, you are this, and you repeated it back. And I'd just be curious, when you go back and look at it, when you listen to it, when you think about it, what was that saying? I don't believe anything happens accidentally. And so I wonder if those correlate with those ones that you wanted to hear back from somebody else, from me, more than, in a different way. I'd just be curious. Maybe it is. Maybe it was just, maybe I paused too long and our brains are like, I got to say something. I don't know. But that would be curious for me as well. I loved your, I think your insights are so spot on, particularly around this inner versus outer validation in a sense. And why do we need this outer validation? Because we don't, of course, it's not anything we need, but we want it. We like to have it. And can we, when we don't have it, can we give it to ourselves, and can that be enough? Because in a sense, I swear, everything I said, I believe completely over you, Reese. So you never need other external validation. You've got it forever. Although I, again, in sort of a non-dualist sense, I'm not clear that we're separate anyway in that sense anyhow. But for getting aside that philosophy or that spirituality, for me, I felt the power in it. And I was able to watch your expressions as well and see what registered and what didn't. And I don't know, it was just lovely to see. And so I really enjoyed that. Now, I'm curious, it brought up the connection, the power of the connection of just speaking good things over people and saying mm-hmm. good things. And there's just such a power in our words. You know, our words can destroy, our words can heal. And it's our choice. We can choose what we do. And so for me, it was just so lovely to have the opportunity to speak beautiful, beautiful truth. That's the thing. Like, this is truth. This isn't puffery or, you know, selfishness or I'm so great. No, it's who you are. And it just exudes from you. So, but I'm curious, were there any of the statements, the affirmations that you found difficult, or like was there anything that stood out that was particularly, I don't know, you kind of recoiled against, or I don't know. And you had mentioned, hey, some that it was hard for me to hear from somebody else. I'm just curious, what were some of those?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I don't know if I would say that any caused me that was an immediate wall or rejection of. And I do think part of that is because at this point in my journey with my own growth and this kind of work, these are all things that I am aware of needing to work on if I do not already inherently feel them. And so there is, I think with certain things like exercises like this, I'm kind of primed with an openness to going there, if that makes sense, that not everyone may experience, and not to say that that's because I'm higher or better or anything like that, but just from practice and experience with, you know, having done this for a while, I think I have a pretty, any of the like awkwardness of it, I think I'm able to shake pretty well. So no immediate walls, but it was a good reminder in, I guess I'll go back to something I kind of said a little bit earlier with like, why did certain ones resonate as true when I heard them? And why did certain ones resonate as true when I said them? And the difference between those, I think that the ones that I am still working on integrating or really working on, or I guess that are really prevalent in my work right now, I think like integrating the shadow is really, really big for me right now. Getting past certain aspects of like, what is this one thing that's holding me back, right, is really prevalent in my work right now. In believing that I already am abundant and already have everything that I need, that there is nothing external that I need. Those resonated as more real coming from an outside source. And I think now in talking about that, it's like, wow, that must really be because a lot of times in my work of self-love, self-growth, trying to embrace this inherent worthiness, I think there is a certain piece of permission that we all probably seek, in that it's okay to have these things, to hold these things, to believe these things. And I think a lot of that work for me has often been permission from my therapist saying, it's okay to say no with a period and that be a sentence. And it's like, mm-hmm. okay, I knew that that was true in my brain, right? But to hear someone else actively give you the permission of doing that hits a little bit differently. And I think one thing that I'm really working on too is being the one to give myself permission. And I think that that is widely reflective of the experience of womanhood in general, and even feminism, right? Or any social justice or environmental justice, any justice work in general, is that it is inherently reactionary to the status quo, to culture. Like, counterculture is still counter to the culture. And there's this weird dichotomy that exists within that, that is, you have to almost completely reject everything in order to start building anything else back up that isn't in response, that isn't in reaction to, that doesn't still rely upon what exists. However, is it practical to completely, like, in a bigger scale, tear down a society? No, the incremental steps towards improvement is likely, well, at least is the system we've chosen to use now, right? I don't know if we've ever really tried the complete tear down, anarchist, I suppose, style. And so I think that that's the thing that's interesting for me, is that it feels very much in reaction to these things as opposed to arising naturally. And I think that's the piece that I want to keep pushing through, is being the one to give myself permission and being the one that says yes and allows without needing anything, whether that be the universe or my guides or source or the things that I hold to be true about my own spirituality. Because I think even when I do this internal work of, like, going inside and trying to really listen and get in tune with what the next step is, there is still this sense of, I'm listening. What is the message? Like, I am open, I'm ready to receive. And it's like, why do you have to be ready to receive? Why can't you just create? Just create. Just do it. Give. You can be the one to receive what you are giving. You don't have to wait. Even if it is from divine source, and that, like, that divinity is very much what I believe in, but very much like we've talked about before, I am also not separate from source. I am not separate from universe. I am not separate from the divine. So in that way, by waiting for a message, you are waiting for something that will never come. By doing it, you are manifesting the message that you already want to receive. Oh, I've lost your audio. I absolutely love that.
I absolutely love that. My dog was barking earlier, so I muted myself for that. No, I love what you said there about, you know, the divine. We're in the divine, but the divine is in us as well. You can't be in something and not have that thing be in you as well. So it goes both ways. And I love the idea of allowing, you know, trusting yourself, giving yourself permission to do is so powerful. And to just trust it and do it. I mean, that's kind of what we're doing here, right? It's just, all right, let's see what happens. Like, we're not planning this out. We're not trying to make this big. You know, we think it will be big because it's real. But, and this is where we're led to. I'm curious, what is something, that you find yourself having a challenge giving yourself permission to do? Is there something that comes to mind in terms of something you're waiting for permission for in your life, do you think, that's been a struggle?
You know, I think it is the things that I feel like have to come from external sources. It's like, well, this is something I can't do for myself. It has to be in relationship to other or external things. And I think that oftentimes the, like, base reality of that will get in my way. For instance, like, this podcast being really big, do I believe that to be true? Yes. Do I believe in Cohere's potential and inherent power and necessity and the thing that I feel inside of me that I've always felt to be true and real, and the impact that will happen? I believe all of that to be true. There is this belief that it's sticky. My brain sticks on it, but doesn't that mean that people have to click, have to listen, have to watch, have to respond and react. And so there is this difficult like paradox that I think in success, quote unquote success, right? Because also there's like the whole capitalism of it all and like wanting to be able to make money doing what you love too, piece of it, that in order to make an impact on people, in order to be able for the message that you have to share to spread widely, you have to care what other people think, right? You have to care that they are going to open, click, like, share all the things. And how do you begin to build that awareness? And it does almost create this lack mindset of, it hasn't happened yet. I need other people for this to be that thing, right? And it's hard because it's like, that is true to a certain extent, isn't it? That in order for something to get views, in order for a message to be widely spread, it must be widely spread through other people. And yet, I do also hold this belief that, like, not just the if you build it, they will come, but that the truth resonates with those meant to hear it. And it's if, you know, the 2.5 seasons of Making Meaning that are out there now have been reaching the people meant to hear it, beautiful. I'm still so honored to have been a part of all of those people's journey. But there is this piece that's like, it's meant for more. It's meant for bigger. This is meant for bigger. Cohere is meant for bigger. But that spurs this lack mindset in me too, that it's like, well, why isn't it yet? Yeah, and I think it almost is like a materialism of necessity, I suppose, that kind of manifests out of that, if that makes sense. So trying to release the need and lack while embracing the abundance, while still not wanting to act as though you're lucky to have stumbled upon my thing. It's like, I'm lucky for you to have stumbled upon my thing as well, right? To hold both of those at the same time.
Yeah, totally. I mean, to me that, and this was one of the ones that, one of the I am, the affirmation statements that I struggled with, I noticed a couple of them, and I'll share them as well, and sort of reveal myself a little bit. But this way, you know, I embrace being misunderstood, knowing that my truth will always resonate with those who need to hear it. And for me, that statement is a challenge because I swim against the mainstream. I'm weird. I am incredibly passionate. I'm provocative. There's a part of me that is constantly monitoring what I say, what I think I'm going to say, to make sure. Right. And I don't like that because that's not who I am authentically is who I am authentically. I say provocative things. I say crazy things. I say vulgar things at times to make a point. Sometimes it lands and sometimes it doesn't. But there is a part of me that's quite scared of being misunderstood. And a lot of that comes from my upbringing. You know, being neurodivergent, I was misunderstood my whole life. And it didn't feel good. And it wasn't safe. And even now, there's parts of me that unsafeness still feels unsafe.
Yeah.
For me to even talk about things like the esoteric or to talk about Lilith and how, you know, embrace that. I mean, from a societal male perspective, that's weird. I mean, that's out there. Mm-hmm. From a male perspective, it's like, why would you do that? You know, from a feminine perspective, there could be some, well, that's our sacred space. You know, you're appropriating. It's appropriation. So on both sides. Now, again, though, so that's misunderstand. That's a fear of misunderstanding, right?
Right.
Quite possibly. But at the same time, there's like you and I, we get it. Like, so just because some people might misunderstand, the people who need to hear it or who are meant to hear it, I kind of like that better in a sense, that it's meant for them. It will resonate with those individuals, whatever gender, whatever right. creed, right? And but that's a scary thing. That part of me that's like, you know, this is, you know, we haven't made this live yet. I mean, we're recording ahead of time, of course. But at some point, this is going to be out there for all to see with my name attached. And that is scary as fuck. I'm not going to lie. Because, like, you know, all of a sudden now these things that I've kept hidden, that I've kept masked. And, you know, one of the 72 spirits of the Goetia that I've spent a little bit of time focusing with is Osei, who I don't remember. I think he's like 47th of the 72 or something. But one of his domains is masking, is basically wearing a mask. And and I was so confused because actually of all the Goetia, goetic spirits, he's not really that well talked about. Like, you know, there's a lot that are like everybody loves, like, you know, that are talked about a lot, particularly in like the love space and because relationships are so important. So there's like the same five or six kind of get the same play. But and you know, when I started the work, it was like I didn't even understand why I was, you know, was pushed in this direction to some degree. But I realized it was about the masking. It was total because none of the other sort of domains or how, and again, I think there's, my belief is that, you know, any of these spirits can do anything, really. It's just these are their, you know, we kind of as humans feel a need to classify things. But, and again, my theology, if you call it that, is still developing. So I,
right.
But what I realize is that masking, and I kind of got off on a tangent there, but I've masked my whole life. And so now I'm trying to step into embracing being misunderstood. So that really resonated with me personally, because there's a lot on the line here. It's kind of like when this podcast goes live, Reese, I've crossed the Rubicon. The die is cast, in a sense, because it's out there and it's always out there. Once you put something on the internet, it's there. And now that could be worrisome. I don't know what, you know, it really is sort of burning my ships. And as Cortez, you know, when he reached the new world, at least according to what I've read. So that was one. You know, I think another one for me was definitely I enjoy pleasure for pleasure's sake without guilt or shame. That really is a catch for me. And it's just, it's things, it again, it's a trailhead, as you said, of something to work on. That Why do I feel that way? Why do I struggle with the idea of pleasure for pleasure's sake? Where did that come from? And I know I have ideas of where it came from, and I but it's something to work on because it's deeply in there. You know, and maybe there's a belief of it's wrong to receive pleasure. You know, that there's a belief, a subconscious belief of that being true. I think it is wrong. I am selfish if I receive pleasure. I am and so it's just interesting to just notice that and not judge it and just say, that's okay. Like, I don't need to force myself, you know, to go out and you know, seek pleasure. I just notice it and say, okay, but is this the experience I want to have in my life where any bit of pleasure is yeah. What do you think?
Right. No, I just think that's so fascinating too, because there is just this interesting, like, when you're working on something, the inherent kind of, instead of just unworking this old belief, it is almost as though you have to welcome in the opposite of that belief and then deconstruct that piece too, right? And societally, we have this, like, the idea of guilty pleasure, which it's something that it has just come up for me a lot recently. That's like, why is it guilty? It shouldn't be guilty, even specific.
Right, that's an oxymoron, right?
It is.
Why don't we call that an oxymoron? Like, you know, bitter joy, or, you know, why?
Oh, and
great.
Why,
I love that.
Why does that even exist as a thing? And it's because it's something that we're all so intimately familiar with, is this idea that something that is not productive, that is just hedonistic, is valueless because it doesn't add back, right? It's like, well, it's not doing anything. And it's like, actually, it does a lot, but just for you and not for anything external, whether that's person, place, or thing outside of yourself. And it's like, that doesn't mean it's something to be guilty about, because then you are better able to give pleasure to others or just help others in any way. And I think too with this, going back to kind of what I said at the beginning, having to bring in the opposite end of the spectrum, perhaps in this context too, you as a man thinking about like pleasure, that is something that in this work is so difficult for so many women specifically. And I think socially and culturally, obviously men's pleasure gets way more emphasized, and there's all of the cultural stigma around like just in like sex and whatever else that it's like, oh well, men will finish and women it doesn't really matter, right? That
that's very women much fake a thing. Orgasms, right?
Right,
women,
right.
Women fake. It's performative for, yes. for women in a lot yes. of cases. You know, sadly,
and so sadly, right. And then this idea that almost in you trying to do this work, right, of advocating for women, of listening and hearing and encouraging women to do this, I do think for a lot of the, for a lot of men, that it's almost like not in a, how you hear like, oh, well, straight white men have had a hard go of it recently. Of course, that's like, right, exactly. It's like scoff, roll your eyes.
Sorry, I can't help right. it. Snort a little bit at that.
But yeah. Okay. But there is something to the quote unquote good ones that are trying to do this work, that it's like there is guilt there, right? That I think does then almost have to be deconstructed too. In the same sense that I suppose I don't want to like project anything onto you, so I'll reframe it.
Project away, Reese. Project away. I can take it.
But like in my like anti-racist work, right? It's like when I was first being awakened to all of this as a white person, it's like, oh my God, I am a part of the problem. I have done all these things. Like I need to educate myself, but I also don't want to like put that work onto other people. And like, I need to do all these things. And it's like actually in doing that, it became, I'll quote Bo Burnham, one of my favorite comedians from his latest special. He says, why do you rich fucking white people insist on seeing every socio-political problem through the myopic lens of your own self-actualization? And I think that that is just brilliant. And I realized that I was like, okay, even in not wanting to make this someone else's problem, I am inherently making anti-racist work about me and my guilt. And it's like, that's also something that I need to deconstruct and let go of so that I can then actually just be an anti-racist. And I think that as difficult as that was for me to work through, I think like, same thing with like the quote unquote good ones with white people, that it's like there is this thing that is, okay, you got to bring in the opposite end of the spectrum that is guilt. But then the next step is like work past that, because that is still almost like about the culture as opposed to the counterculture. Am I making sense? Where it's like, I'm almost hearing you saying like in wanting to like do this work as a man and really provide for women, it's impossible, or provide for women, help women, however you would want to frame it, it's impossible for you to not hold some hesitation in this way specifically with like, well, I'm a white guy. Why do I get anything, especially pleasure? Like, it's not about me. And it's like, but also, you still deserve that too. And you still like have to build that back up. And by you both being an advocate for yourself and for women and women's work, it actually brings us closer to equality and equity, as opposed to this like flooding the other side in order to try and reach some balance.
I get that. Yeah. I think that resonates. You know, I think it is complicated in many ways. I think you're spot on in terms of the needing to exaggerate a movement or exaggerate a thought in the opposite direction. And the analogy that comes to my mind, because one of my micro obsessions, I'll call it, has always been golf. And there's not many things in my life that kind of stick. And I'm okay at golf. I don't think I'm not terrible, but I'm not. You know, in my mind, I want to be like a pro, you know, and I know I'll, I don't, I'm okay with the fact that I don't want to put in the work to get there. I've made, you know, there's so many things that are more important to me.
Right.
But one of the things, as you're trying to change something in your golf swing, often you're told to exaggerate the movement. So if it's, oh, you should feel the club, you know, behind you, whatever the case is, like you really just crazy exaggerate it. And as you do that, then when you actually do it for real, you know, you're more towards the middle because everything regresses to the mean. And that is one, absolutely one way to look at it. To me, though, I think the question is, you know, I think a lot of times people can this flip that thought, and it's almost like cognitive behavioral therapy in a sense of,
right.
of I have a negative thought, so I immediately flip it to a positive one. And sometimes I wonder if that can work. And but you're still focusing on you're trying to change something. It's like I have this thought,
right.
I immediately have to flip it to something else. Why can't you? Is it better to just let it be? So I have this negative thought. I'm not this podcast, you know, I'm not worthy. Whatever comes up, rather than saying, no, I am worthy, I am worthy, I am worthy. You know, like a parrot looking into a mirror. And again, no judgment there. That works as well because it's all good. All of what we're saying is absolutely true and it's absolutely false. Like everything's a half truth. It's how you believe it. And if that works for someone, great. But I've found personally, it's much more useful to, you know, to not fight it in that way so much, and it's to purpose that this is what I want and to when these feelings of inadequacy or whatever they are, like I mean, let's use the example since you went there, like wow, you know, you are a privileged white guy, Dennis, and you know, who are you to talk about women's empowerment and you know, what's your angle, dude? Like, and I've had to search myself honestly in terms of is there an angle here? Like, are my motives pure? Whatever the hell that means, because that's
right.
And the answer I come up with when I look at this is I genuinely believe like meaning the fleshly me, the brain me, whatever you want to call that, I didn't really choose to do this. I never thought I'd be doing this if you had said this. So to me, I believe everything I say because it's inside me. It's who I am.
Yeah.
And so those parts of me that are worried about that, it goes back to I embrace being misunderstood. There's going to be some listeners perhaps who listen to this and they don't they're not in a state or in a place where they can listen and hear from me because maybe they're wounded and they're hurt. And I respect that so much. And hopefully, you know, I do believe you need both the masculine and the feminine. We need men in this space, but maybe not for everybody at every time, you know, and it's not about being higher or lower or better or more mature or less mature or any of that. There's none of that. It's who needs to hear it right now. Who needs to hear it right now? But, you know, you said whatever. The way I see it is I just see myself as lifting up women. Like, that is ultimate. Just lifting them up. Like, giving them a hand up. Giving them a shoulder. Whatever you need to. I want you to see where you're. This is your home. Your home is up here. Like, but the world has put you down here. And kept you down. And so, I just want to lift you. If you need a step stool, I'm here. If you just need somebody to steady your arm, if you just need somebody to blow, make the wind blow to give you tailwinds so that you can, you don't have headwinds anymore. Whatever you need, I want to pour into that. That's my heart. And there's no, to my knowledge, no guile in that.
Right. At all. And I want to be super clear that, with everything I was saying earlier, absolutely, we still need these movements of feminism, anti-racism, LGBTQIA+, all the things that may sound as though they're coming from flooding the other end that hasn't gotten the attention. And I do think that is because equity is necessary to get to equality, right? Mm-hmm. I do think in our own personal work, it's interesting to still balance this out to have our an internal energetic balance, and that in saying that, I suppose I just want to be super clear to you too, Dennis, that like it just is fascinating to me that the pleasure piece is one that sticks for you, knowing that this work of supporting and lifting up women is so important to you, that it just made me curious about if that does come from a place of not guilt, but almost like humbling the self because of the societal culture milieu that we exist within, or if you think that that is something different, if that is more of like just your own personal work that has always kind of been a part of who you are. And I think all of us probably do have a little piece of that, but yeah, this kind of, because I know for me that I guess I used the anti-racism analogy earlier, but yeah, that's been there. Would you categorize that as that, or as a bit of both? I don't know. I'm curious.
That's a great, great question. And it's definitely one I would want to think about more, actually. But initially, my thought is that society itself has absolutely created, you know, this is necessary. And,
right.
And it's not about guilt in that sense. Like I don't feel guilty because I know in my heart I was never, you know, I know what my heart always has been.
Right.
For me, though, while it's needed, that is convenient to me. This is just something I feel in my bones. It this is what I was meant to do. And I've been searching for a purpose my entire life. Like all of these people, you know, I've heard people talk about purpose. And, oh, you know, live a purpose-driven life, all of these other things. And I never experienced it myself. Or if I had a purpose, my purpose was just to survive another day or to make more money or to have a bigger house and or to have more things. And those purposes seemed very hollow to me. Now, I don't feel guilt. I don't feel shame for having those, you know, thinking, you know, living that way, because I wasn't ready to walk into who I am now. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I've always felt this way. Like, I've always, and this has always been who I am. Society, in some senses, put me, or I chose to listen to the cage, and I chose to stay in the cage of smoke and mirrors that society put me in, or allowed me to walk in that door. And so, have I always lived this way in terms of, I think I've always been a very positive, affirming person, but I know, like you said, I have been part of the problem before, out of ignorance, not out of deliberate anything. But I don't feel guilty about it because it's who I'm finally getting to be who I am, and so these conversations, like talking with you about this, gives me pleasure. Like this is pleasure almost for pleasure's sake. I don't have any guilt or shame about this, and every time I'm able to have somebody see, a client see, or just a friend see, or somebody see how magnificent they are. And really, you can see when somebody starts to believe it, how it transforms everything in their life. And I love it. And I imagine a world with just filled with women who are unapologetic about who they are. And that because they will lift everybody up, men more than they can even imagine. But again, all of that's nice. That's very nice rhetoric, and I'm a great orator, and I know that. But the truth of it is, the God's honest truth of it is, Reese, is that I just love doing this. Like I love pouring into people. To let them see who they are. I love it with every fiber of my being.
How beautiful.
I can't not do it,
damn it.
I can't not do it.
Right. Right. To look at this idea of like, yes, justice work inherently is a little bit about our own self-actualization, but to remove that piece from the puzzle to say, how can I best serve the other? And then as opposed to it being like, oh, it makes me a better person, or it makes me a better ally, or it makes me, even though it may do all those things, it's like, I just enjoy it because it is me, like to truly let whatever, whether it's justice oriented or not, or whatever kind of purpose project it may be, to let that purely be something that brings pleasure. Like, what a key to this grand puzzle that is like trying to make our society and culture a better place, because justice work is grueling. It's hard and it causes a lot of self-interrogation. But if we can get past that and see how it is so enjoyable to learn from other people, to be able to exist with others without the barriers that all bigotry and list any other word here, right? I'm like transphobia, homophobia, sexism, racism, all the things, all of those barriers to just be with others, the joy of that, and to find joy in that, to be a part of the process, as opposed to it being about me or you, it is about us. I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, because of course I'm hyper aware of, you know, being a white woman in now talking more broadly about justice, but I hope I'm not speaking out of turn and saying that that just seems like unlocking a major piece to me of how we can make this world better and more enjoyable as we continue to move towards growth, right? Like, how can we celebrate the successes that we have had while enjoying the transformation that we are currently going through, knowing that it will continue to be a journey? Like, having all of those things.
It can be tough to hold all of that, you know? It's a lot to take in. And, you know, as it pertains to social justice and you know, I think you have to grow where you're planted, in a sense. So for me, while I absolutely believe in all of those things and the need for social justice and consider myself an ally, that's not my calling in terms of, you know, hey, this is my space. This is where I'm planted. This was what was, I believe, given to me or chosen, or maybe I chose it for myself, whatever verbiage you want. You know, and again, it depends on how you view the universe and source and where things come from. I view as everything interconnected, and I'm honored that this is what was chosen for me to choose. Again, I chose to walk into it, but why did I choose to walk into it? Maybe that's the divine spark that caused me to want to do this. But we're all in this together. And so if I can help, you know, so this is my piece, and could I do more? I mean, should I play in other spaces? Absolutely, I could, but that's not where I'm called to. And we have to swim in our lanes, in a sense, but also recognize that our lanes can expand as we expand. So don't keep the door open for other things is also true. And the other thing is I think in our cancel culture, right, in this world where information flies around and we have such polarizations of people, you know, oftentimes we can be scared to put ourselves out there, and because, you know, it is scary, right? I mean, and it goes back to that you know what I think we started with in some sense is this is scary to do this to truly be what feels right, who you are. But I just think more and more we need people who are brave enough to do it. And again, trust that our truth will resonate with those who need to hear it. Because we're coming from a place of love and of concern and of compassion and these things that, you know, love never fails. Like, period. Right. And, you know, I may say it inelegantly. I may offend somebody by, you know, it's certainly not intentional. And if you are offended, why? Why is there an offense? Why not? Let's talk about it and see what, because, and all of these isms come from separation, thinking that this is a zero sum game, that, well, if this group gets what they want, somehow something is taken away from me.
Right.
You know, and so that's why we lash out. Like, And it stems from it stems from a culture of lack, essentially.
Yeah.
And I don't want to ever live in lack. Because you said abundance earlier. Like, how do we live in this abundance? And to me, abundance is just whatever you need. It's always there. Is abundance. Like, it's not about having $10 million in your bank account. Although that's nice and great. And and I have no problem with that. But it's just knowing that what you need will be provided. I always like the analogy of the in Exodus with the Israelites going through the desert, and they collected this manna that came from heaven, this mystical food substance that came from heaven, and you know, they only were to take what they needed for that day. And then, because if they took more, it would spoil. And so, of course, it's an analogy, right? Like, give us this day our daily bread. So what's our, you know, what is our daily bread? Why do we feel the need to store up capacity? Why can't we trust and live in this, you know, because if we're storing for the future, it means we're afraid. We're doing it out of lack. Again, I'm not suggesting, hey, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. I mean, obviously, you know, we live in a world here. We have to, you know, I mean, it's great to be pie in the sky, but hey, I got to pay my rent and my landlord's pissed at me because I'm a month and a half behind. Like, these are things that need to be cared for. But how can you, what would it be like? What would it be like to live in that abundance mentality on a daily basis? What would it be like if you truly, truly thought that you were a queen? That you know, I know you were on a trip recently, you saw the crown jewels. Like, what comes up? What would it be like to literally, metaphorically, wear those on your head every day? And truly believe that. I mean, we can talk about it and it sounds, you know, oh, you know, Yas Queen, that kind of thing. And there's a truth to that. But what would it be like to really feel that and just let that saturate your bones? Like, I am the queen. The queen is never late. The queen is never wrong. And to live that in a non-arrogant way, of course, you know, that's the problem. People see that as arrogance. And I see it as beauty. I see it as truth. I see it as goodness. Because you can't be that way and not have your heart right, I think. If you truly know you're the queen, there's no reason to...
And it doesn't preclude anyone else from holding that same truth, right? If anything, I believe that the people who hold that truth about themselves tend to be the most loving, open, empathetic, and compassionate people I know are the ones who treat themselves with the truth that they are a queen. They treat the others with that same reality too. It is very much the Jesus, to the least of these you have done unto me, right? It is the, when you treat anyone with kindness, you are doing that to yourself, you are doing it to Source. And when you believe that you are a queen, that is taking up the knowledge that everyone around you is too.
Yep.
And it is hopefully
modeling.
And
you just want them to know it. It's like you want them to know it so badly. That's the thing. It's like, it's not, oh, this is me. How great. Now I've got enough. I've got the solution, me, myself, and I. I need to lord over other people. Why? You don't need to. Yeah. You have it all already in you. You are glorious. You are beautiful. You are intelligent. You are unstoppable. These are all true. True. This is just truth. And it's truth is beautiful. And so when I, you know, when I say you're a queen, I mean that. Like, that's what I see. I see those crown jewels on your head and on the head of everyone I see. I try to. Even when I get upset, I still try, you know, when something triggers me. I mean, I'm not some Zen monk, you know, where I never get triggered. I wish, it'd be nice. But even in those interactions where I am triggered, I still remind myself that the person I'm speaking to, the woman I'm speaking to, is a queen. Mm-hmm. I remind myself of that. Or the man I'm speaking to is a king. We're focused on women. Again, because of the pendulum, that's where the need is.
Right.
To me, men don't need this. And, or if they do, I'm not the one to give it to them. And maybe somebody else is, and great. Because again, the same thing we just said about if you know you're a queen, you're going to behave in that fashion. The same is true for men. If they know who they really are, they're going to treat women the way they need to be treated.
Well, there's no all of all of the things, exactly like you were saying earlier, the hoarding and the, I mean, hoarding of anything, money, resources, power, all of the hoarding of power that we are seeing right now is absolutely the most perfect metaphor, or not metaphor, example of hoarding power because of fear. It is all such fear-based thinking. And I think when you know that you already are, have, and will be enough, that just does not happen. That only comes from fear. And I think one thing too that I was thinking about earlier and has come back up with, like, as we're talking about this lack mindset, is how you said that this idea of things being like for you, it made you think of the affirmation that was about experiencing pleasure and that being, you know, good as it is, and it could be pleasure for pleasure's sake. The one that really came up for me is that everything I have that I need is already within me. Mm. And I just thought that that was so interesting that that was, we both had similar responses to those different affirmations, spells, whatever you want to call them. But I think that they both kind of root in this similar idea of, what if I do need something from someone else? Or what if my pleasure is not good enough? What if it does have to be about someone else, right?
Or what if my pleasure is wrong? Like, you go back to that guilty pleasure. Like, it's perverse. Right. It's twisted. It's and you know, my answer to that is that's not true. Yeah. Now can you do things that are wicked, which just means twisted? It doesn't mean evil, which people think the word wicked means twisted, but it, or evil or something, but it doesn't. It just means twisted. And we may do things that are unlovely. You know, I mean, bad things happen. Let's not sugarcoat that. People are mean. People are evil in a sense. People hurt people, damage people every day, every minute of every day. We're seeing that. But the fact is that there's still deep down inside what their true desires. Their desires are warped because maybe they've. So, for instance, somebody hates somebody so much that they want to kill them. You know, I mean, the murders happen, right? You know, generally lovers' quarrels happen. Like, the fact is that person, I don't believe, even if they commit the murder, even they commit this heinous act to take a life, their desire wasn't to kill that person. Their desire was simply to be free of that person. And they just could not see any other way to do it. And again, I'm not condoning murder or anything that. But I'm just saying, you know, that is the desire for freedom wrong or guilt? Should they be guilty of that? Should that? No.
Yeah. I mean, and that's also so interesting of thinking about, you know, like you said, like a lover's quarrel, most murders are by close family members. And it's like some desire to be free of something. But even if we expand it to like serial killers and people that aren't just crimes of passion, right, that are more crimes of deep psychological unsettlement, that's a desire for freedom too, for freedom from these desires, from these heinous things. Like, anyone who has done any research into true crime, which it's blown up recently, which is also interesting, knows that it is the idea of trying to quell perverse desires. That is what, well, and then define perverse, but these bad feelings and things that people have. And it's like, don't we all just want to be free of that which makes us fear ourselves?
That's ultimately what it comes down to, right? We fear ourselves. And I know we're kind of at time here, but to me, that leads to the last statement that I also, you know, felt something in terms of insight, and it goes just to what we're speaking, and that is I am comfortable with my light and bask in the beauty of my sun. Mm. And there's a part of me that struggles with that idea that I have that my son is beautiful. And I don't know why. It's you know, there's that's something to explore. And you know, this idea that my light is beautiful. I don't know. that sort of dovetailed with what you were saying.
Absolutely, because I think I may be opposite side of the same coin in that, that's a hard affirmation for me too, but not because it's difficult for me to bask in my light, but because of the shadow that that light still casts, right? That if I am basking in light, there is always going to be a shadow behind me that I can't see. If I'm looking up at my own sun, what is behind me that I am not paying attention to? And so I think I've gotten really comfortable at only looking at the light and not the shadow, but realizing that, like, not only can you not have light without darkness, but light creates darkness. The moon shines because of the sun. Like,
yeah. Wow, that is so profound, Reese. Holy cow. Like, man, I wish... this is we should pick this up because, and maybe we just I don't know, that was so powerful, and I would love to explore that more. But the one thing that came to me as you said it, and maybe this is a good place to sign off, I don't know, is people need shadow too. Like you said, you know, your light casts a shadow, but you know, a shadow is a respite in a desert.
Yeah.
Like, why do we think what you may think is your shadow is providing shade and life, and it could be saving literally the life of somebody else, your shadow. And so the stronger your light, the more pure and powerful your light is, the longer shadow you're going to cast, which means you help more people. You're providing more shade and life and comfort. And you know, I mean, this 91st Psalm, which is one of my favorites, you know, he who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. That's beautiful. That's poetic.
Yeah.
That is such a lovely statement, and it's the absolute perfect way to end, Queen. Thank you.
It is.
That was
Thank you, Dennis.
Lovely. Let's explore this more. Put a pin in
we
it.
We will. But, we have our list of topics continuing to pile up, which is perfect and makes me even more excited. Well, thank you, Dennis, for being here, of course, for bringing the meditation. Thank you, listeners, for being here, being a part of our purpose and listening to this and being the ears that our purpose is meant to fall on. You are just as much a necessary piece of this puzzle as both of us are. So we very much look forward to communing with you all soon. And Dennis, I will talk to you very soon as well.
Very soon. Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Bow Down is a weekly podcast from the Coherent Collective that explores esoteric and empowered feminism.
Please subscribe to Bow Down wherever you may be listening. And if you enjoyed the episode, please leave us a like, a 5-star rating, and a review. And if there's anyone you think would enjoy this episode, or maybe just needs to hear it, please share it.
If you want to stay up to date on all things Bow Down, you can follow the Cohere Collective on any social media platform at the Cohere Collective and check out other content and offerings at www.thecoherecollective.com.
If you're interested in working with Reese to find and pursue your purpose, I encourage you to head to www.thecoherecollective.com/life-coaching.
If you're interested in working with Dennis to shed your mask and embrace your desires, you can email Dennis at dennis@theheartstoybox.com.
Huge thank you to Jack Corbett for Bow Down's music. You can find him on Instagram at j.corbe. Thank you all for joining us today. We're so glad you're here.
And as always, we hope you feel like you are living more coherently. And until next time, love.